The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Believe You Me. We used to say the numbers. I don't know where we're at now. Probably somewhere close to 200. Lewis, you're looking good. You got the glasses on. Still keeping those Steven Seagal shooting glasses on. All right, I get it. You're committed to looking like a pedophile. Good for you. Listen, you take something on board, you stick to it. I respect that about you. Massive night of fights at the weekend. Lots of scandal, controversy all over the place. We're going to break down the fights. We're going to give our opinion on the fights, talk about our opinions on the judging. Lewis, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good, Mr. Bisping. Quiet for the storm. My aunt, my 82-year-old aunt, just got her passport this morning. I'm very happy. It's official. She's coming to Jamaica, man. This weekend, we're going to go do a little family vacation. Warming my heart, actually.
Right about now, man. They're going to get themselves to Jamaica. They're Gomez's. They're going on a vacation, man. All right about now.
My aunt's never left the country. Not once in her entire life. Just poor her whole life, never did anything. So I'm going to take her on a little vacation. You know, it's nice. It feels nice to be able to do that. You know exactly what I'm talking about because we've had these conversations where you do things like that and you're like, you spend all this money, you're like, fuck, it's way too much money. But at the same time, it's like, you know, my aunt's got a few years left in her life and to be able to give her, you know, a cool little experience like that is making me feel pretty damn good.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I keep saying to my mom, I keep saying to her because, you know, I mean, hopefully she lives for another 10, 15, 20 years, but who knows, right? She's in her 70s now and she's not in the best of health. So I always say to her, just recently I was texting, saying, Mom, what's something you've always wanted to do your entire life? What's like a dream you always had? I think she wanted to go to Lourdes, which is like a holy place in France. But I said, hey, listen, I don't have to be there because like she doesn't want to probably go with me. I said, Maxine and Shireen, my sisters, think of a place that you've always wanted to go, and I'll do it. I'll take care of it. I don't even want to be there. I just want to make sure that you get this experience, you know, basically just for me. It's more for me, more from a selfish reason. I want to do it for her, but also I want to be able to know that I tried to do my best to make her happy before she passes. Of course, hopefully she's going to be around for a lot, lot longer. But yeah, we had that conversation recently.
What a boring dream that she has. Go to Lourdes in France. What is it? You're going to pray?
Well, that's I don't fucking dream? Know, but listen, bro, don't shit on Mrs. Bisping's dreams, okay? If she wants to go to Lourdes to France and waste her time, and by the way, England to France is pretty cheap, okay? It's not a lot of money. It's not a lot of money to jump on the fucking Channel ferry and go across the channel, sorry. It's about 50 quid. I'm like, Mom, you got it. You want to go France? You want to go the next country along? You got it, Mom. I'm going to make your dreams come true. So you shut the fuck up over there, Lewis, okay? And don't tell her that there is flights and business class and all the rest of it. She's going on a bus, okay? I'm sending her on a bus because she doesn't like flights. Never let it be said that I don't do what I need to do for my mother.
No, we gotta take Mrs. Bisping and party. We gotta take her to Ibiza, right? What is it? Ibiza?
Ibiza.
Ibiza. Ibiza.
No, listen, yeah. We said before we started on this show, I said we're just gonna get into MMA. We're gonna get into MMA today. I thought we were gonna talk about the soiree that you had at the Lewis household, but you throw a curveball and you're talking about aunts going on vacations with you. We get it. You're successful. You're running a podcast network. You have a team of assistants. We get it, Lewis.
You bring up Mrs. Bisping to me, you know I'm going to start getting romantic. You know I have that fantasy.
For those that don't know, when me and Lewis did, I did like a one-man show hosted by Lewis in Toronto last year. And I, we, we had like a multimedia section and Lewis was bringing up photographs and there's a picture of my mom in like a bikini and he's just making the most inappropriate comments, but it was funny. It was hilarious. So
yeah, there was.
But yeah, you just fucking keep Mrs. Bisping out of your mouth or your brain or your mind.
I had friends over. I had a bunch of friends
over. You did?
Over.
Yeah. You had a big party?
I did. Well, not a big party. I had about 10 people over, you know, people drinking, smoking weed, having a little bit of fun. Nothing crazy though. I mean, it's like, you know, you got a small apartment in New York City. There's a good energy though when you have a bunch of friends over that. We started gambling. I won $680.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. Real dollars or BIM dollars?
No, not BIMcoin. By the way, BIMcoin, we'll talk about that later on, did very well with BIMcoin as well. But Harrington, during the fight, he was talking about just some crazy bet, and I guess it was a plus 230 bet that Valentina Shevchenko would finish by TKO or KO. And I was like, that's just going to happen. So yeah, I put $300 down. I profited $680. So I was very happy. I was like, guys, you know what? Pizza on me, beer on me. Very easy to be generous that night.
Well, on the flip side, while you're sitting there in New York City, in your apartment, surrounded by people, making bets, you know, just like having the best time, I was sat in the half mansion by myself, not a single person around me, sitting there. Yeah, man, I almost cried. And we'll get to Adesanya Romero, that great press conference, by the way, Israel. We'll get to that later in the show because that was funny. Yeah, no, I sat there by myself, but it made a nice change, actually, because you get to sit and watch the fights properly. Because in the past, I used to, you know, do a similar thing, have a few friends over. Whenever I was training for a fight, I'd have the whole team over, all the sparring partners, trainers, coaches, all that shit. You know, we'd enjoy the night. But this was different, just sat there. Lucas went upstairs. He was on his iPad most of the night. I allowed him to do so I could watch the fights in peace and quiet. Had a bit of sushi and lived life like a generally boring bastard. But it was a good night. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a fun night of fights. Besides the bizarre judging, which obviously we're going to get into. Don't know how you feel about some of these decisions, but at the very least, there was some questionable decision that even if you agree with the main event's final outcome, you have to admit that, you know, four rounds for John Jones seems a little bit crazy. We'll get into that on today's show. But yeah, I mean, what do you prefer, Bisping? What do you prefer watching the fights? At home, you got to choose one. At home, at a bar, live in person is a little different though, because you're working and the access you have is a little different. Say from a fan's perspective, because you've sat there as not a fucking MMA superstar. You've sat in the, you know, not the front row before. But what do you think is the best experience overall?
Lewis, I've watched MMA from every facet of life. Okay, I've been there. I'm a man of the people. I'll still be a man of the people. I watched those UFC 245 three title fights. I watched that in the VIP section. I don't have any comms. I couldn't hear the commentary. You know what I mean? I was fucking slumming it. Yes, I was getting served champagne and snails and oysters and shit whilst watching them, you know, and I had a guy fanning me down in case I got a little overheated. But still, you know, I was one of the riffraff, one of the hoi polloi. No, listen, it depends what you're trying to do, right? Because when you go watch a UFC event live in the arena, I believe that's one of the best sporting events you'll ever go to. The atmosphere, the production, the music, the lights, the crowd. That's awesome. But if you're trying to actually watch the fight, like, I mean, from an analytical point of view, it's maybe not the best. Yes, you can look at the big screens, which is obviously more advantageous than looking at the fighters in the octagon, which is always a weird one, right? I don't know how you feel about this. When I'm in the arena, I want to watch them for real in the cage. I want to watch actually human beings, you know what I mean? But then I find myself looking at the screen because obviously sometimes if they're behind a pillar or whatnot, you can't see. Sometimes they're a little bit far away if you're not that up close and personal. So I watch on the screen. I'm like, well, I could just be doing this from home. So I want to watch the actual people. So that's a weird one. But if in a bar isn't the best environment to watch a fight, in my opinion. Again, it's great. You know, you have the atmosphere and all the rest of it. But if you want to watch it properly at home with the commentary, I think is the best. That's the best seat in the house. I mean, Mike Goldberg used to always say, him and Joe Rogan, we got the best seats in the house. But the best seats in the house are at home, feet up, maybe with an alcoholic beverage in your hand, and watching them, hearing the commentary, getting the expert angles that the UFC's production team work on. That's the best way to watch a fight.
I think Bisping said it best.
Do you think that what about watching it with the volume off versus listening to the commentators, right? Because I feel like the commentators, they paint the picture for you, right? And they do, but do you feel like you, especially you, because you really understand the analytical side of it more than most people, do you enjoy watching it, or do you see it differently, I should say? Forget to enjoy watching. Do you see it differently when you watch it without the commentators? Have you ever sort of gone back and watched maybe the same fight and watched it with the commentators versus without, and maybe sort of had a different understanding of it?
Never done that. I've seen people talk about doing that. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes, you know, some commentators, you know, unknowingly kind of lean towards one kind of narrative in a fight. And sometimes that is the case. The play-by-play guy, you know, whoever that is, John Anik, Brendan Fitzgerald, whatever, they just literally call the action as they see it. Now, the color people, you know, they paint a little color and maybe, you know, a bit of their opinion may get in there. But no, I've never watched it. Never watched it without the sound on. You know, I'm interested to hear other people's opinions. You know, I want to hear what the other commentators are saying. You don't always agree with what they're saying, but that's what makes it interesting. You know what I'm saying? But Saturday night, there's a lot to talk about there with the judges. One of the fights that we're not going to get into too much, but James Krause. Let's just talk about James Krause real quick. Well, let's just give him a quick shout out because James Krause was there to corner a teammate on the Friday. And I think his teammate, what was the situation there, Harrington? Couldn't make weight or got pulled from the card, something like that. So James Krause, on a day's notice, 24 hours, steps up, moves up from welterweight to middleweight, taking a beast of a fighter on 24 hours notice. Now, he lost the fight. He gave a good account of himself. But I just think he deserves a round of applause and a fucking good pat on the back, should I say, for doing that. I mean, a lot of people speak about, I'll fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. There's a guy that truly did that. He has my respect.
Yeah, so it was James Krause was in town to corner his teammate Yusuf Zalal when another fighter, Antonio Arroyo, was forced out of his bout with Trevin Giles, I believe, due to a medical issue. He was there. He's a UFC welterweight who was on a six-fight win streak, decided to go up, take the fight at middleweight because he could make that while eating sushi the day before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's great. It's badass. But you've said this before. You know, there's not much to lose there for this guy, right? He's a badass to do it on short notice. If he loses, literally, we're still giving him props and we're still talking about what a badass he is to do it on short notice. Moving up in weight against a guy, a guy who's larger than him, not much of a downside. Even snapping the six-fight winning streak, it's not really... It's out of his weight class. If I was him, I'd be like, dude, yeah, whatever, fuck it. I'm that fucking badass. That's what I'll do. So, whereas, yes, I do think it's awesome. I'm still not going to necessarily, I think that's what any fighter in that position should do.
Well, you are right. I can't step away from all the times I've said, listen, when fighters step up a weight class, they've got nothing to lose. I do stand by that, but a lot of the time I direct that at champions that want to fight at champions in other weight classes because they want to fight for that belt or whatever because they have nothing to lose. If they lose that fight, they're still the champion of their division. But, you know, he took it on 24 hours notice. That was badass. And he gave a really good account of himself. He went out there. I thought he might gas after one round. He went the distance. And the reason I brought this up is because you mentioned the judges. And this was one of the first really bad instances of bad judging because James Krause clearly in that first round, he was pushing forward, trying to get the fight to the mat. He ate a couple of shots and then he got him down. He got Trevin Giles down, took his back, and controlled him for the rest of the round, threatening a rear naked choke, and came on multiple occasions to nearly finishing the fight in the first round. And I think he must have had him down, controlled for about 4 minutes, roughly. And still, one judge gave that first round to Trevin Giles, which is just insane. It's absolutely insane. I don't know if that was the first example of bad judging on the night, but that certainly set the tone for what was going to be a night of very, very terrible judging, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, so much so that, I mean, I guess it was during the Andrea Lee fight, Rogan pointed out where he was like, I'm watching the judge right now. He was like, the judge is not watching the fight. He's not watched the fight in 30 seconds. And he starts counting it. And I'm going like, Jesus fucking Christ, dude. I mean, it's that's how bad it was. Because if it was 5 seconds, 10 seconds, I think Rogan would have ignored it. But it's to a point where it's so bad where he had to call it out. And that's probably against the company's interest. For as much as people like to talk shit about how everyone fucking kisses the ass of the UFC and sort of like, you know, toes that line, you know, I got to give Rogan credit because he said straight up, he called it like he saw it in that moment, and that doesn't necessarily shine the best light on the UFC or the judging.
Well, to be honest, I agree with what you say. Fair play to Rogan. If you do see something like that, we got to say that. We got to step up. We got to put our necks on the line for the welfare of the fighters, because these guys are out there fucking punishing themselves on a daily basis, risking a lot of things for the fans' enjoyment. Yeah, of course, for their success as well. But for the fucking judge, to be so disrespectful, to be not even watching the fight. I mean, let alone the fact that that's what he's getting paid to do on that evening. His job that night is to watch the fights and judge them and get paid for it. Number one, he's failing at that. And secondly, he's disrespecting the sport and he's disrespecting the fighters in there and all the sacrifices that they made. On the note, what you just said, though, yeah, you're right. Fair play to Rogan. Totally agree. But the judges, the referees, the judges, they're all appointed by the commission.
Right.
I don't think the UFC have any say in that. So you're not really criticizing the UFC. I'm sure Dana would say the same thing. I don't know if he did at a post-fight press conference. But you're right. I mean, that was good of Rogan to point that out for sure. But as I said, the commission takes care of all of that.
Okay, I agree completely. I just think that on the surface, for people that don't know, it sort of looks like it sort of looks bad.
Yeah,
it looks bad
yeah.
for the sport. For, you know, forget UFC, belt, or whatever it is. It just looks bad for the sport, right? And I think it was really a great moment to see that Rogan actually cared enough to say something and spoke up. And we've seen that happen a few times. But what do you think is going on there where a judge isn't watching? I mean, what could possibly be going through their mind? And also, is there any follow-up on who that judge was? And what happened? I'm sure Harrington, there's some more information there. Did that judge get in trouble? Are they going to have a conversation about this? Because it's just really irresponsible. The amount of months that you fighters put into committing themselves, I mean, putting their lives on the line, not only in the fight but sparring in the cage. I mean, the amount of the amount that you put your body through to kind of get yourself there, and then for somebody to say fuck it, I don't even care enough to watch when you're being paid to watch this. It's just, it's disheartening. It's just really, like, you sort of go like, well, there an asterisk on every fight throughout the night because these judges were there just not really paying attention?
Well, the thing is, you know, I mean, we had that one example there where Rogan said, and it was through the Andrea Lee fight, that he wasn't even watching. And that did go on for some time. Then we had the example of in the James Krause fight, the guy, he took his opponent down and controlled him for the entire round and came close to finishing it. There's no argument on earth why the other guy won that round, okay? And then, obviously, we had the main event as well. There were some, you know, a lot of people are talking about that as well. So there was some questionable judging, and Dominic Cruz and Rogan and a few people throughout the night mentioned, listen, these judges are getting this shit off tonight. I even tweeted out, I said, Jesus Christ, these judges are tripping their balls off here tonight and not in a good way. You know, they were making all kinds of crazy decisions. The only thing I would say is that judges need to be held accountable. So, you know, at the end of the fight, we had...
what is this?
We had, what's it called? We had Rogan, Cruz, and Anik talking about refereeing. Sorry, talking about the judging and what we can do, you know, talking about different ideas, you know, of how we can combat it. And I always say, I've said this multiple times, it's pretty simple. For example, let's take the James Krause fight as the example. Round one, that judge got it wrong. Everyone can see that, right? So here's what needs to happen. You sit that judge down in a room with some other judges, three or four other judges. You watch the fight with him, right? And then at the end of it, he explains to the other judges how he scored it for that other person. And if he can't give a rational, convincible argument as to why the other guy won the round, then guess what? You're gone. You don't get to judge anymore because you obviously, A, don't know what you're talking about, B, didn't watch the fight, or C, you're just fucking getting it wrong, or you're lying, or even something worse. So unless you can give a really good rational explanation of why you judge that for somebody else, you're gone. You have to be held accountable.
Yeah, it's disheartening, and I agree with you. There has to be some sort of accountability. If it's maybe a fine, a better education. Well, I mean, I don't know, because it's commission by commission, right? So in Texas, I don't know. Nothing. Anybody can just rattle it off the top of their head what the parameters are to become a judge and what your experience factor has to be, right? So a lot of the times I know in certain jurisdictions, it's just boxing judges. They go, cool, well, now you're going to judge an MMA bout, and they have no experience in mixed martial arts or grappling at all. I know that was a problem a few years ago. I don't know, but I think overall, having a certain standard that maybe the UFC has to implement themselves, because they knew how to, they're the leaders in this, so they can sort of work with the commissions to sort of create that standard. But having some sort of minimal education because there's so much on the line. I mean, we'll wait to talk about the main event, but I mean, I can't wait to hear your fucking opinion. We haven't spoken about this at all, but I can't wait to hear your opinion about this main event, because you were talking about like the difference between millions of dollars in Dominic Reyes's life, millions and millions and millions of dollars. Never get the opportunity again. It may break him mentally. He may never be able to climb that mountain again and get there. I think he will. I think, you know, mentally that probably did a lot for his confidence, because he, in, you know, my and a lot of people's opinion, he won that fight, but the accountability has to be there, and there has to be some sort of,
yeah, but I hear what you're saying, but the Jones fight wasn't shocking. He won. I had Dominic Reyes winning that fight. Okay. I even tweeted out, I think it was the final round, Jones has to get a finish this round to win this fight. Okay. And still it went to a decision. I had Jones winning. I had Reyes winning 3-2. I feel, and we'll do this now, and then we'll backtrack. We'll go
1-2 and 3 for Reyes.
Rounds 1-2-3 for Dominic Reyes. I felt he won those rounds big. Certainly won rounds 1 and 2 big. In rounds 3, he was starting to slow down a little bit, and he did the same in rounds 1-2-3. I will say this: what you've got to realize is that was Dominic Reyes's 13th fight. Okay. Reyes, 13 fights. He'd only had 13 fights. If I'm not mistaken, John Jones, I was counting up before on Wikipedia, has had 15 world title fights in the UFC. And that was the first time that Dominic Reyes had to go 5 rounds. He'd had one fight scheduled for 5 rounds, but it never went there against Chris Weidman. He knocked him out in the first round. So he's got no experience of fighting 5 rounds, going to championship rounds, and how to monitor his gas tank. Right, he went out there in the first round, put it on Jones spectacularly, had him backed up, connecting with good shots, had Jones actually running away at one point. He paid him no respect, all right? And everybody talks about that. Oh, I'm not scared of this guy. I'm going to walk right through him. It's all easy to say that when you're at the press conference. It's easy to say that when a reporter has a microphone in front of you. It's easy to fucking act hard and cocky and all this. But when the cage door shuts and the referee says fight, you don't always back it up. Reyes fucking did. He walked right through him, walked him down, backed him up against the fence, had John on his bike, but then he ran out of steam. Around the 3-minute mark of every round, he started running out of steam, and that allowed Jones back into it a little bit. And then Reyes would take a few breaths, and he would give Jones a good punch, a good crack, whatever it was, something to keep Jones honest, to stop him advancing too much, to stop that mental momentum that Jones was gaining every round. And then he gets a minute rest. Round 2, he goes out, he does the same thing. This time, instead of running out of pace, running out of steam at 3 minutes 30, he ran out of steam at 3 minutes. And then the same thing, then Jones kind of came back. Then he rests again, round 3. This time, Jones came back at 2.5 minutes.
But even when Jones was...
can't monitor his gas tank.
I apologize. But even when Jones is coming back, I don't feel like Jones was taking over in those rounds. He was really just walking him down. He was taking the center of the octagon, and he was sort of controlling the distance. But Dominic Reyes was still landing more in those rounds, unquestionably. I mean, the fight metric says it. It was just so obvious. After 3 rounds, everybody in my apartment, all 10 people, whether they were huge MMA fans from like somebody like Harrington or people that had no idea about MMA at all, like a couple of chicks that were just hanging out, everyone was going like, wow, John Jones is losing this fight. Simple as that. Losing this fight. And he was.
And he was. And he did. He did. He lost that fight. And a lot of people want to shit on Jones. They want to talk shit. But you know the mental stress it takes to go into 15 world title fights, one after the other, against the number one contender, against champions, you know, the former champions, one after the other. It is not an easy thing to do. And he continues to pass the test. Now, I'm even saying, I'm standing here and saying, fucking Reyes won that fight. But it was a close fight because the last 2 rounds, they were Jones. Right. So at the very best, it was 3-2. And a lot of people, I'm looking on social media this morning, all over Twitter, a lot of people are saying they've watched the fight back without commentary and they give it to Jones. I haven't done that. I haven't watched it back again. I made my opinion on the night. If I watched it again, maybe I would change it. But my impression on the night, exact same as you, he won the first 3 rounds. But still, round 4 and 5, Jones walked him down, closed down the octagon. And I'll tell you what, Jones never really got hit that many times super flush. You got to give Jones his credit for his defense Right? His defense is fantastic. Always had a hand there. Whenever he connected, it was kind of partially blocked or something. The strikes never got through that clean. Of course, there was a few that did. But for the most part, a lot of them were semi-blocked. So Jones is very, very good defense. He walked you down in 4 and 5, and he turned it around. I thought Reyes won, but it wasn't a robbery. It wasn't a robbery. That term gets used far too much. That was not a robbery. That was a close fight that I feel the judges got wrong, but it wasn't a robbery.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I'll do that tonight. I'll go back and I'll watch it without commentary and really just focus on trying to look at it through those eyes. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, with Jones, maybe there is a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe there's a lack of motivation. Is it that Dominic Reyes was that good or John Jones underestimated him? Is it maybe like, because no. We saw something happen with, remember when GSP at the end of his reign at 170, it was a similar thing with Johnny Hendricks. Like Johnny Hendricks came in and really took it to him. You know what I'm saying? Gave him that crazy fight. And I remember people were like, oh shit, is GSP slipping or is Johnny Hendricks that good? And then Johnny Hendricks sort of fell off. He wasn't as good as people thought he was. After GSP retired, but it kind of reminds me of that dynamic right now where, you know, George had cleaned out everybody. There was really not much else for him to prove at 170. And then there was a couple close fights where he didn't absolutely dominate and people were like, what's going on here? So do you think there's any lack of motivation on John's end or how do you assess that? Was that a great performance by Dominic, poor performance by John, a little bit of both, great performance by John?
No, it was a fantastic performance by Reyes. Reyes went out there, did exactly what he needed to do. I mean, come on, look at them two when they squared up. Reyes is a big dude. Of course, Jones has fought big guys before, but he's a big, strong, athletic guy. Yeah, he looked bigger. And I tell you what, fuck me, the takedown defense of Dominic Reyes, it was incredible. Because there were certain, you know, in rounds 4 and 5, there was a couple of times Jones got him down. But Reyes just bounces back up and just has this ability, uncanny ability to just scramble, break the grip and get back to his feet, get an underhook, get back to his feet, turn off the fence. It was unbelievable. It really was. It was just so incredible to watch for somebody that doesn't really have a wrestling background. You're just so strong, so athletic. He used to be a college footballer, if I'm not mistaken. So he has that athletic background, but the strength and just scrambling ability was just incredible. I think Dominic Reyes, because Dana is talking, you know, Dana said he was open to an immediate rematch, which is interesting because we've never seen that happen before, unless you were a champion from another division. But if he gets an immediate rematch, I feel... Well, there's two trains of thought. Number one, Reyes could learn to pace himself. If he learns to pace himself a little better, doesn't get carried away and come out with a crazy pace in rounds 1, 2, 3, he could easily win that fight. Because when he had the cardio, he was all over Jones. When they were evenly matched at the start of every round, prior to him running out, Reyes was in the driving seat. Now, when he started getting tired, that's when Jones would take over. So if he fixes that problem, I'd see Reyes winning that fight. But here's the thing. Look at the rematches that John Jones has had. He had a rematch with Daniel Cormier. Very, very close fight first time. What does he do? Goes and knocks out DC cold. Has a super, super close fight with Alexander Gustafsson. Everybody says Gustafsson should have won that fight. What does he do the second time round? Chokes him out on the floor. Do you know what I mean? So you got to give Jones his credit. He's got a very, very good analytical mind. He's got excellent coaches around him. And he's able to formulate a game plan on a rematch and say, okay, here's what I did wrong the first time. The second time, he always fixes it. So whilst I do believe Reyes, with a little more experience, with a little more maturity on how to monitor his gas tank, could win the fight, Jones always wins the rematches in a big style. So I'm kind of, contradicting my own argument a little bit.
Well, not only in the rematch. I mean, as you've seen, I believe almost every time John Jones, he always looks better than his opponent toward the end of the fight. He seems to learn in real time from the fight. Comes out round one. Anderson Silva used to do this a lot, too. He'd sort of like start off slow and be computing what his opponent does and then sort of calculate it and then come out round 2, 3, 4, 5 and be able to just decimate his opponent and look better and better. This is what happened with John Jones in this fight. You know, John Jones, I think it was a big part, the athleticism and the cardio. John was able to sort of keep up his pace and do what he wanted to do throughout the entire fight. But John Jones also just looked better as the fight went on. That first round, it was like, whoa, I was like, wow, Reyes looked really good in that first round. But then you just saw John Jones a little more each round, a little more each round. And then by the fifth round, had this been a 10-round fight, John Jones would have fucking decapitated Dominic Reyes, right? So
Yeah, but it's not a 10-round fight. You know, it's like saying if you were allowed guns, you would have shot him, you know. Guns aren't allowed either, buddy. But, yeah, listen, here's the thing. Everybody talks about John Jones having a lack of boxing. That's kind of what, you know, he struggles with a little bit. He's good at the points. He's good at the kicks. Sorry, he's good at the knees, the elbows, the oblique kicks, the unusual strikes, excellent elbows. But the boxing side of things hasn't been too good. His boxing looked good on Saturday night, as I said before. Certainly the defense. The defensive stuff was very, very good. But, you know, Reyes, over three rounds, was the better man. By far, more aggressive. He put it on him. But as I've said before, the mental stress of having that many title fights, you got to give it to John. You have to respect what this man is capable of doing inside the octagon. You know, and also, Reyes today is not the champion of the world, but I feel like he is respected by everybody. His stock has only risen. And I honestly feel that Dominic Reyes will be the future of the light heavyweight division. And my God, what an amazing story. This is a man that was like a fan of MMA, used to play the fucking video game. And now here he is fighting world title fights. He was an IT software guy or something at a high school, I think, Harrington. Is that correct? Something like that?
Nailed it.
No?
Yeah.
All right. Excellent input, Harrington. Excellent input. I thought you could give us a little bit of a little bit of backstory. Well, Michael, it all started in 1997 when he attended the IT Institute of Texas and passed some scholars. From there, he got his first assignment at something high school. And whilst on lunch breaks, he decided to attend a wrestling class. No, you come back with nailed it. Thanks, Harrington. Remind me to come to you more often for points and information.
Well, I didn't think it was relevant. John Jones used to kick sand in his face on the beach, and then he started eating egg whites, and now he's a UFC championship-level fighter. Sorry about that.
Is that actually true? Because if it is, it's awesome. Which
absolutely
I know it's
not.
I like it, though. Listen, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, Harrington. Just throw some bullshit in. People will go out there, they'll Google it, and they'll go, oh, maybe Harrington's full of it, whatever.
Mike, Valentine's Day, coming up in just a few days. We all know you're going to be doing some amazing stuff with the wife. Obviously, I'm single. It's my first Valentine's Day that I'm single in a while. So I'm just getting nice and spicy, spend a little bit of time by myself. But I'll tell you right now, I have the perfect Valentine's gift for your significant other, whether it's your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, grandma, whoever it is. This Valentine's Day, you need to give your loved one the gift of a clean and healthy butthole. That's right. That's right. This is going to be all courtesy of the amazing, amazing Omegle. Omegle creates life-changing bidets that are incredibly easy to install. You don't need to get a new toilet or call a plumber or anything. All you do is attach the Omegle seat to your old toilet, and you have a brand new luxury bidet.
Yeah, these things are absolutely fantastic. I just want to say, though, Lewis, if you're thinking about your grandma on Valentine's Day, it's a little weird, a little off. If you're thinking of your grandma when you're cleaning your butthole with the Omegle, again, a little bit weird. But anyway, side note, back to the bidets, back to these revolutionary toilet seats, which is what they are, basically. It arrives in the mail, super easy to install. And then instead of, like, you know, taking toilet roll and wiping your ass, you do it with the luxury of water. It will be a heated seat. If you're living in a cold part of the world, the heated seat is so luxurious to sit on. You can aim the water, you get it just the right temperature you want, you clean yourself ridiculously. I mean, think about this. You know, you go into a bathroom, you wash your hands, so why wouldn't you clean the orifice from which the excretion is coming from? The feces is evacuated through the butthole. Clean that. Clean your hands, of course, but come on. Clean the essential part of the equipment here, Lewis.
We do love to pat ourselves on the back as Americans. We're like, oh, we're so forward-thinking. We're so amazing. We're this amazing country that... But then look at our butts. Look at our butts. We're taking one-ply toilet paper and just, you know, barely cleaning our buttholes anymore. The Omegle is going to change the way that the world cleans their butts. And I'm going to tell you right now you're thinking, you're like, all right, this must cost thousands of dollars to install, right? Thousands of dollars. Michael Bisping, tell them how much you can get this just starting at.
Listen, if you've got a spare $69 lying around, maybe, you know, down the back of the couch, you could probably get $69 together, borrow it off somebody, okay? $69, you can change your toilet habits for life.
That's a pair of shitty running sneakers. It's not even good running sneakers.
A coffee. from Starbucks every day this week. You can buy one of these. They are super cheap. $69 is the starting price. Warm your ass, clean your ass, all that good stuff. Trust me, these things are beautiful. They're nice. They're easy to install. And as I said, they start at just $69. So check them out. Go to myomigo.com, M-Y-O-M-I-G-O, myomigo.com/gas. That's myomigo.com/gas to get 15% off your order. Do go there. Check it out. There's a bunch of different designs, varieties, obviously depending on your price range. But these things, trust me, they really make the bathroom experience pretty pleasurable, if I do say so myself. All right. Where were we?
When they announced that, when they announced the decision, they were like 49-47, 49-47, or 48-47, 49-46.
I thought Reyes.
I was like, oh, Reyes won. There was no way they were going to say, and still, when they said 49-46. In what world do we see John Jones winning four rounds? And please explain to me somehow, in what way. Mr. Bisping, devil's advocate. It's time for devil's advocate with Mike Bisping.
All right. I'm the devil.
Can we get like a flame, like some sort of like a flame effect right now? Give him two little horns. Come on, Harrington. Devil's advocate, explain to me how one of the judges could have come up with a 49-46 round in favor of John Jones. Devil's advocate with Michael Bisping.
Don't put me under so much pressure like that. I don't fucking know, because here's the thing. I cannot. I mean, listen, I get it. A lot of the judges, as we said, they're appointed by the commission, and a lot of them only have boxing backgrounds, right? Only have boxing backgrounds. If that's the case, fucking Jones got a few takedowns in round four and five and controlled the action. He didn't get takedowns in 1, 2, 3, and he got outboxed in rounds 1, 2, 3. So the judges with their boxing backgrounds would have to score it for fucking Dominic Reyes, not the man from Best Buy. Okay, they would score it for the challenger. So yeah, I can't even give a devil's advocate point of view. Reyes clearly outstruck him in the first round. Reyes clearly held the center of the octagon, right? There's other things. When the rounds are close, what do they say? Aggression, octagon control, and I think there's something else. Well, octagon control in rounds 1 through 3 was Reyes. Aggression was rounds 1 through 3 was Reyes. And, you know, landing shots was clearly Dominic Reyes. 1 through 3. 4 and 5, he kind of took off. He threw a few shots here and there because he was fucking exhausted. He was moving back the whole time. Jones did an excellent job of cutting off the cage, getting in his face and putting him under pressure all the time, shooting takedowns, being successful. But Reyes would dig deep, really go to that next level after tapping to something inside himself to get back to his feet, because that's not hard. But he did it, and he would break the gap. But then Jones was just on him constantly, right? So rounds 4 and 5, Jones. Rounds 1 through 3, Reyes, right? I don't think it was... You know, there's no need for some big inquiry. There's no need for people to sit around there and say, well, why did you score that? Because it was a close fight. And I think round 3 is the one in contention. Okay. I'd have to watch it again to really make some scandalous remarks towards that judge. I'm not going to. I've got better things to do with my time. I'm flying out to fucking Rio Rancho to talk about that fight card. I'll be watching those fighters. It's been and gone. Deal with it. Reyes lost the fight. I thought he should have won. But I tell you what, if they do a rematch, I am betting big on Dominic Reyes. And I tried to bet on him Saturday night, but I fucked up. But as I said before, Reyes, he'll be the champion one day.
So the I guess the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, they had some comments. This is interesting. They made some comments officially on the selection process, and also about Rogan's comment about, the Judge Solis.
What did Rogan say? Do we have the actual quote that we can read out for the listeners and for myself?
Well, this is when Rogan said that the judge was looking at the floor.
Okay.
So what they said was, I guess this is from an official spokesperson, Telemang, says, claims have been made that a judge was not paying attention to the fight and was looking down at the floor. One of the advances that the UFC have made in the past several years has been to provide small video monitors below the floor level of the octagon for each judge to more closely monitor matches. So if that's true, I think, honestly, that judge is probably getting fucking death threats right now. So if that's the case and he was looking at a monitor that can make him better see the fight and judge the fight better.
Listen, I've commentated many events. I've been ringside for many events. I have fucking been in the ring for many fights. I've never seen a monitor on the floor underneath the fucking octagon. Never in my life, unless Texas is taking it to the next level for their judges. They're installing monitors in the floor. I'm calling bullshit. Do you know what else you can do? I'm going to do it right now. You know what else you can do when you're looking at the floor? What am I doing right now, Lewis? What am I doing?
Looking at your dick.
What am I doing? Looking at my phone. I'm looking at my phone. I'm texting my wife. I'm texting whoever. Maybe I'm tweeting. I'm Instagramming. I'm doing a little story saying, look, world, look at me. I'm the dickhead that's going to get this fight wrong, right? There's no fucking monitors on the floor. There's no monitors on the floor. Is that what they're saying? They're on the floor or underneath?
This is a lie. It'd be really fucking weird lie.
I was going to say it has to be true because otherwise someone could just say, what do you mean? I worked the event on Saturday night and there was clearly no managers there. They're like, yeah, but you weren't a judge. I don't know. Maybe he was watching it on his phone. He was watching the TV production on his phone.
You just call him a guy a liar. You're like, there's no fucking monitors. It's like, I'm pretty sure it'd be pretty easy to disprove or prove.
Listen. I wasn't in Texas. I was not at the fight. I was sat on my couch, and I'll go out on a limb. I'll say there was no managers there. They are full of shit. Those commission bastards, they are lying. They are lying, right? I wasn't there, but I'll say it. I'm willing to go there. Fuck you, Texas Commission. Lying bastards. They are lying.
With you, Mike.
I'll say it too. Fuck it, dude. Fuck it. The entire state of Texas. I don't trust any of them.
Fucking lying bastards, you gun-toting fucking hillbillies. There ain't no monitors in the floor. Monitors are in front of you. They're on the desk. They're in the big screen. They're not in the floor. What is this?
Are we expected to believe that, that Texas has the technology to put monitors in the fucking floor? These country bumpkin fucking cowboys and fucking Indians, they barely have running water down there.
They can't even use the new unified rules. Whatever that means. They spoke about that as well. They're so far thinking. They've got monitors in the floor, but they can't even use the up-to-date modern mixed martial art rules. Harrington, can you do a little homework and find out what the clarification on that is, by the way? I'm assuming that just means adopting the three-point touch system, three limbs on the floor, you can't knee them in the head, things like that. But yeah, they didn't accept the new modern mixed martial art rules either. So listen, either way, Texas... get your shit together, buddy.
We shouldn't even do MMA in Texas, to be honest with you. They're a little old timey. It's a little bit, you know, they need to get with the current times, and then maybe we'll bring some MMA back to Texas.
Hey, don't slack off the people of Texas. They're hardworking, honest individuals. You know what I mean?
I have my comedy festival going to Houston in 6 weeks, so I love Texas. Please, everyone, come out.
Exactly. Listen, as long as you're not judging MMA, Texas has got some of the best people in the world. I love them.
Goddamn right.
All right. Anyway, so Jones won. Jones won again.
He did.
I think that regardless of whether or not it was a debatable decision, well, it was definitely a debatable decision, but regardless of whether or not you think he won, the reality is he did win, and that will not be overturned. It's another successful title defense, and once again, he's still the champion of the world. He is without a doubt the greatest of all time to fight inside the octagon. Because, yes, it was a tough fight. Yes, maybe he should have lost, but he didn't. He won, and he continues to do it. I think that's, what did I say, 15? 15 world title fights in a row. That's fucking insane, man. You have to congratulate the guy, whether you love him, you hate him, whatever. You've got to respect that motherfucker for doing that at that level for so long. And everybody's saying, I've got the answer. He's not good at wrestling. He doesn't like getting hit. He parties too much, and he's going to get tired. None of that matters because he still finds a way to win. Every single time. It is getting closer and closer, but he is still winning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he has anything left to prove at 205. If I'm John Jones, I don't take that rematch. You know, as you're even talking about it, like, yeah, I guess there's a real debate for round three there. And I guess if you want to debate round three, that's the deciding factor there, because I think he unquestionably won round four. Round five. I had Dominic Reyes winning round four, but obviously that was a big one up for debate as well. I think it's so rare. The problem is this. It's so rare to see John Jones get like hit and get rocked and to be losing those exchanges that I think it comes off almost like the power in that moment. You're like, oh, shit. Like, every time John Jones gets hit, the whole room explodes. Like, oh. Whereas when Dominic Reyes is getting hit, it's just sort of like you're expecting Dominic Reyes to get sort of pieced up. You know what I'm saying? So there's like there's this weird thing where, like, we sort of overreact every time John got hit. And I sort of noticed that, well, I guess, in round four.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, the hits that John was hitting him with, of course, there was a couple of nice head kicks that landed flush, but they weren't like big show-stopping moments. You know, there was the little kicks to the leg, the little teeps to the midsection, you know, little jabs here and there. Whereas Reyes, when Reyes landed, even though they weren't always the biggest of shots or they didn't land flush, like I said before, they definitely had impact, you know, and they definitely put John on the back foot. They had him up against the fence, eating uppercuts. It's a sight that you've never seen before. Then you even saw John turn around and kind of jog away just to get himself away from the action for a second. That's very impactful. Whereas I said, Jones, yeah, it was the typical stuff, you know, chipping away. That's what Jones does these days. He just chips away, breaks down your defenses. He weakens you. He gets you tired. Then he starts to get you out there. Did it with Anthony Smith, did it with Thiago Santos, and he did it with Dominic Reyes now. You know, he didn't get those guys out of there, but the whole time just systematically beating them down, wearing them down. All right, we've talked about that one long enough.
Well, I'll good say just him. Before... In fact,
no. I'll tell you what I want to see him next. Either a rematch with Dominic Reyes or a move to heavyweight. You touched on that a moment ago. The rematch with Reyes, I think he should do that because that will always be up for debate. There's a nice shot of Reyes landing a beautiful uppercut. If he goes up to heavyweight now and doesn't fight Reyes again, there'll always be those naysayers saying, oh, well, you ran away from Reyes. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I think rematch with Dominic Reyes, and then he's cleaned out the division. Cleaned out the division, go up to heavyweight and see what you can do there.
I asked on Twitter who they thought, 742 votes right now. Who do you think should have won the decision? John Jones, Dominic Reyes, 64% say Dominic Reyes, 36% say John Jones. So that's overwhelming. That's 2/3 of the people that watched that fight think that Dominic Reyes should have won that fight. So, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing an immediate rematch. I don't think it's going to happen. It's very rare we see that. I believe Shogun got an immediate rematch with Machida after a questionable decision, but it's very, very rare.
It is rare, but Dana did say he's open to the idea, which was surprising to me because, you know, listen, if you're the UFC and you're trying to plan what's best for the UFC, having Jones as the champion is best for them. But by all accounts, going to give him another chance. So that's the UFC doing the right thing there. Just on the topic of this fight, obviously the big thing is the judging. And we were talking about the judging before. Here's something that got floated on the night. And I think it's a terrific idea. Makes it super exciting for the audience. And it lets them know the fighter exactly what's going on. It's open scoring. So they have a little thing. And so they know after each round, fuck me, judges are saying you lost that round. Imagine the sense of urgency on a fighter in round four. If they're like, fuck, man, you're behind. It says it up there, just like it does in a basketball game or a soccer game or whatever it is, right? The score is up there for people to see. You are behind in this round, so you better fucking leave it all out there because if you go to a decision, you have lost this fight. So, A, it actually lets the judges be accountable because the public know what they voted for. B, it lets the crowd, you know, understand what's going on. And C, it tells the fighters, hey, listen, you're fucking down. And yeah. I think that would solve a lot of these problems and make a more exciting product.
And they could simplify it as well. I mean, I think they don't even... 10-point must system is fine. I just feel like there is still a lot of gray area as to what 10-9, 10-8, 10-7... Like, it's up for... I know that it's easier to get a 10-8 round now, but it's still like, what does that even mean, easier? There's no real criteria. So why not just simply collectively say, take the judges what they score. I agree with open scoring every round they know, but simply... You won that round, you lost that round. Nice and simple. You won, you lost. Make it nice and easy. If it's, they got to win two out of three.
No. But the thing is, if they do that, regardless of how big you win a round, if you've just, say, one guy skims around just by the skin of his teeth, super close round, but gets a takedown at the end of the round, in your system, he'd be one up. In the next round, the other guy goes out and just fucking demolishes him from start to finish, from pillar to post for 5 minutes. And the guy barely gets out of that round alive. On your system, they got even scorecards. No, the guy that just fucking almost killed him in the second round, he needs to be ahead. So there needs to be 2 points deficit or a 3 point deficit, you know, a 10-8 or a 10-7 or even half points. You know what I mean? So the scoring system needs work. You know, I haven't got all the answers. Can't pretend I do. But
what was the difference in pride?
I think open judging would fix it all. Say again.
What was the difference? How was the pride scoring again? I'm trying to remember. Well, they had some cool elements to it.
Yeah, well, they had, obviously the first round was 10 minutes. And I think it was still like a 10-9 system. But if you were inactivity, stalling, you got a yellow card, and then like that you lost a percentage of your purse. I mean, that's the real way to motivate a fighter. It's like, listen, you're getting your ass kicked either way, but at this rate, you're losing fucking 10% in your purse every time the referee gives you a yellow card. You don't want to get your ass kicked and lose your money, so that'll step you up a gear. But anyway.
Mike, let's take a quick moment and talk about Sheath, which is one of my favorite sponsors in the world. Sheath makes the best underwear on the planet. I'm going to tell you right now, they look great. They feel great. It feels just high-end and amazing. The fabric is fucking amazing. And also, it's very unique. They have a special pouch that keeps the Frank and the Beans? Keeps your Frank and Beans in place. It looks like you're an underwear model. Even me, I look at my underwear, Mr. Bisping.
Yeah. I mean, it's debatable, right? You know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, you know, and I'm sure my one good eye will look at you in the Sheath underwear, whilst I will look at the underwear and think, wow, that's a really cool design. They look so comfortable and breathable. In fact, it has an inverted kangaroo pouch for your jaw that keeps your junk from sticking to your legs. But whilst I look at the physique holding the underwear, I'm not so sure about that one. But back to the underwear. Sheath underwear was invented by a soldier while serving in Iraq, where you can imagine balls tend to get very, very hot. So we developed the prototype in Iraq and raised money for a Kickstarter to launch Sheath. And now they are supporting the show in a big way. And they're supporting me as well. I have a tremendous amount of Sheath underwear. It's all I wear. They're awesome. They're comfortable. The designs are great. They are very, you know, they're not uncomfortable to wear. They do keep, you know, they separate the balls from the penis. You got a nice little pouch in there. I can't say enough good things about this company, Lewis.
I'll say right now, if you buy Sheath underwear, and you could seriously, if you don't like them, you're like, this isn't the most comfortable underwear I've ever worn, and you don't love them, write me an email. I mean, I'm not going to refund your money or anything, but I will take it to heart. We'll have a discussion on the show.
It's okay. It's okay, because whilst you are a cheap ass and you will not refund the money, it's okay, because Sheath will. Sheath creates amazing underwear. And if you love them, and if you don't love them, they have a 100% money back guarantee of your first pair. Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case.
Wow. Okay?
The man was a war hero. The man gave up his life, his freedom to defend his country. Whilst out there, he developed this revolutionary type of underwear that keeps your balls cold. Derek Lewis loves them, and he's now selling them at non-profit to give back to the world. And if you don't like them, if you have the audacity to say,
I don't know if you can say it's non-profit.
Yeah, well, whatever. I just threw it in there for funny purposes.
I just don't know.
If you have the audacity to say that they are not good underwear, they'll say, okay, fuck you, give them back and give you your money back. I mean, come on.
Is Fruit of the Loom doing that?
Purchase.
Is Hanes doing that? Nope. I don't think so. You put your balls in a pair of Hanes underwear, those are your underwear for life, motherfucker.
Calvin Klein, I don't see money back guarantee from them. No, sir.
In fact, to be honest with you, a good scam would be just get some Sheath underwear, wear them a few times, send them back, get a new pair. I gotta be honest with you. Why wouldn't you do that?
Don't do it. Just edit that bit out, please, Brian. No, but seriously, guys, check out the underwear. They have supported our show for a long time, and we are big fans of their company as well. They are fantastic. You know we like to fuck around, but do please check them out. Get yourself a favorite pair of new underwear by going to sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BELIEVE20 for 20% off. By the way, they ship anywhere in the world. So once more, that is Sheath, Sheath, sheathunderwear.com, and use the code BELIEVE20. You'll get 20% off. All right, let's move on. We'll talk about the co-main event. Caitlin Chookagian, Valentina Shevchenko. I don't think this surprised anybody in the world. You put some money on Shevchenko, did you say?
Yeah, well, I didn't realize. It was the fact that Shevchenko was a plus 230. It was plus 230 for knockout or TKO. And I was just like, I mean, that's how she's going to win this fight. She's just such a vicious striker. Really brutal ground and pound. And Harrington said that, and I was like, I got to do it. And I just threw $300 down, won $680 profit.
I predict these things.
It was
Look
beautiful.
At this guy.
It was nice. It was
cheeky 300, eh? It's like, oh, Harrington gives me these odds. So I just whimsically, just a cheeky 300, a little bit of chump change I just had lying around. You know what I mean? You didn't go in with $30, $20, $50. Oh, I'll just have a little flutter to make it interesting. Lewis is like, what spare change do I have in my pocket?
I considered putting like thousands of dollars down on that because it was such a guaranteed fucking bet.
Whoa.
And it was crazy because she was beating her up so bad at one point when she'd get her down. I was like, please don't choke her out. please do not fucking choke her out, because she could have done anything. Actually, Harrington wrote that in the notes, which was pretty funny. It's, she looked like she could have beaten her up with her own hands. She could have done anything she wanted to. It was like a big brother beating up his little brother, and it was just, you know, it was very, very one-sided. But yeah, it was really fun. I'll tell you, when you win $700 profit, it makes the entire night worthwhile.
She also had...
Oh, yeah.
Guys, want to put this in there. She had an excellent quote during the post by presser that I forgot to put in the notes. She said, once she opened her up at the end of round one, she saw the blood and knew she wouldn't finish the fight. It was just a matter of how she was going to end her.
Yeah, well, you know, to be honest, and no disrespect to Caitlin Chookagian, great fighter, excellent contender, but she was never going to win that fight simply because Shevchenko's just too good, right? She's a 17 times world kickboxing champion. She's got excellent wrestling, good jiu-jitsu, and she's just physically strong. You can see that. And then on top of it, the mindset. Let's not forget the dancing capabilities. Bro, she can spin around and do that fucking dance. You know what I mean? That gives her an advantage. But she's just so good. The level of competition, the only woman out there, I think Amanda Nunes beat her twice. I think there was one other. Might have been Katsingano as well. I'm not sure. But still,
that was was just awesome. That was on the regional scene where they fought in a barn silo, and it was ended by a questionable doctor stoppage. Is her only other loss?
Liz Carmouche, yeah. 2010, C3 fights Red River rivalry. It was. She looks great. I mean, to be honest with you, Amanda Nunes, it shines a light on how good Amanda Nunes is, because Valentina Shevchenko looks unbeatable against anybody else.
The thing is as well, she does look unbeatable against anybody else. Whenever they clinched, the superiority that Shevchenko had, that's when it really became abundantly clear. I mean, her accuracy in the strikes, the precision in the strikes, you know what I mean? Chookagian, she didn't want to commit. She didn't want to get in the pocket too close. She didn't want to risk being hit. So she was hitting from out of range. You know what I mean? Like, you see it a lot of times that people, the shadow boxing from the other side of the octagon, they're moving the head around. It's like, you don't, when you're 10 feet away, right, you don't want to be doing this because you can't get hit anyway. You're on the other side of the fucking octagon. You do this shit when you're in the pocket. You throw your 1-2, then you take your head off the center line, you move around. That's when you do the shadow boxing. That's when you do the head movement. There's no need for it to do it on the other side of the octagon.
It's a waste of energy.
Again?
It's just a waste of energy.
Waste of energy. It's a waste of energy. Conserve your energy and use that when you're in the pocket. That's when you have to use it. And she was throwing kicks. Listen, it's easy for me to say from my couch, right? Eating my sushi, go get in the pocket when you're going up against a world champion that has legit knockout power. I get it. You know, but Shevchenko would just take her time. She would wait. And then when Chookagian struck, boom, she would counter. And she would counter perfectly. And every time they grappled, every time she got hold of her, boom, it was a little foot sweep, whatever it was. She got her down to the floor. And on top, you know, it was one-way traffic. You know, Shevchenko was just so much better on the floor. Now, she got that crucifix from side control. She kneeled on one arm. She isolated the arm, isolated the head. It's a classic technique. It's a crucifix from side control. The referee, I thought, stepped in a little bit early. I feel like, you know, the referee could have given a longer, but I actually don't care because there was nothing else going to happen. That fight was not going to turn around. Chookagian was not going to get out of that move and then make some miraculous comeback. She was beaten by the better fighter on the night, and the referee just prevented any more damage. I will say, though, there was the escape to that move. It's right there, right? If you're on your back and someone has you inside control, right? Picture this with me, everybody. I'm going to tell you how to escape this. You would have looked amazing. It's fucking talent time with Bisping. Here's what you do. You're on your back. Someone's got you inside control. They've isolated an arm, right, with one of their knees. Their knee is over, their leg is over there. This leg, whoa, that on the floor, just comes over, hooks that leg. You pull them this way and you sweep them right on top. If she'd have known that, now, she'd have trained with me. Bisping. If she'd have trained with me, she'd have swept Shevchenko and got a stoppage herself, but she doesn't.
Put yourself there, okay? Shevchenko's on top of you. Okay, she's got you in that crucifix. Now, walk me through what you do and how you reverse it and how you finish that fight in that moment. This is Michael Bisping.
Very simple. You're on the back. You get an elbow to the face like this. You just kind of.
But it's a 125 pound girl, remember?
Oh, okay. Sorry. I just get the fuck off. What the fuck are you doing, cheeky bitch? Hey, it's people watching this. I'm not just going to let you elbow me in the face in front of the entire world. What do you think you're doing? Get, stop, stop it. Okay, now apologize. What? Mean it? Okay, we're good. We're good.
You mean mugger.
What if I told you about elbowing me in the face? Don't make me. No, no, no. That move is actually very easy to escape. Maybe I'll show you sometime on video. But yeah, there you go. Listen, Shevchenko. She's awesome. She's incredible. I'm a massive fan. I love everything about her. She's just a fucking ice cold queen. She really is. She's a badass. She's a great fighter. She's a good person. She's still humble. And, you know, for my money, she is the best fighter in the world because she's just great. She's awesome. She's not the best female fighter, but she is definitely the best at 125 pounds.
Yeah, you know? She's great. And she just the way they moved looked very different. You know what I'm saying? Like, Chikigin, I mean, Shevchenko, she just moved like a really high. Where's he going? Don't hit your dog in front of the fans.
Sorry about that. I had to shut the door because someone's out the door. I've missed what you said there. My apologies, guys, for the live peeps watching. Say that again.
No big deal. I was just saying the way they moved. I mean, Valentina, just from the second they were in there, just looked like a very high-level athlete, where Chikigin looked like a fucking diner waitress. And but
I wouldn't go that far. Chikagian's good. She beat Joanna Calderwood, right? And that's not an easy thing to do. Joanna's a great fighter. I said this last show, you know, but Shevchenko, it just shows. Joanna Calderwood's a fantastic fighter, and I sing her praises all the time. And she's probably next in line because there's not too many challenges for Shevchenko left. But she hasn't been through Joanna Calderwood yet, so that makes sense. But if you look at the fight that Joanna Calderwood and Caitlin Chikagian had, very close. Chukagian got the decision. But Shevchenko just steamrolled through Chukagian. It wasn't even hard, right? She'd never had to fight through any adversity or anything like that. She was just the better person by far. And it was clearly evident, as you said, just the confidence. If you read the body language, Shevchenko was confident to just stand there in the pocket, let Chukagian come at her and then just counter and punish her. Every time she came into the striking range, she would punish Chukagian. I think one of the commentators, I think it might have been Rogan said, Chukagian needs to stop attacking and let Shevchenko attack her. And I fully agree. She should have just said, right, because, you know, when you want to be aggressive, you want to be the one going forward, you know, you want to push the fight. Well, every time you go forward, if they've just got your timing and you're getting caught, you got to say, right, hold on a minute. This isn't working. I need to fucking go to a plan B. Every time I go forward, I get countered. All right, let them come forward. Let them be the one to dictate the pace. And then you look for counters. Give that a try. Because being the aggressor clearly wasn't working.
Mike, real quick, let's take a moment and talk about my favorite sponsor in the world. I'll say it. I don't even give a shit. I'll say it straight up. Blue Chew. Blue Chew is my favorite sponsor. I'll tell you why, okay? It has changed the way that I look at sex. I've always liked sex, okay? But if you don't know, Blue Chew, it's the same active ingredient as Viagra or Cialis. It is a performance enhancement drug for the bedroom. It gives you a leg up in the bedroom, as they say, best thing.
Yeah, well, listen, everybody likes sex, Lewis, everyone. I mean, that is how the human race has become so popular, so rampant throughout this planet. I mean, there's over 5 billion of us, I believe. Everybody likes it, but not everybody is good at it. It's just like mixed martial arts. I was pretty good. You suck. It's like producing a show. You know, the producers of the Howard Stern Show, they're really good. Harrington sucks. You know, just like certain people in the bedroom are just stallions. They are beasts. They are incredible performers. And some people, when the pressure's on, when the big lights are on, they just can't seem to get it up. Yeah. Well,
some people are Francis Ngannou in the bedroom. Some people are CM Punks, as they say.
Yeah, well, if you are a CM Punk, if it sounds like we're talking about you, then guess what? Fear no more. Yes, you will never become an amazing mixed martial artist, but you can become an artist in the bedroom, and you will be able to paint masterpieces every night. You will rock your significant other's world into oblivion by using Blue Chew. That's right. It's got the same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but your online physician consult is free, so it's cheaper than those other two. It only takes a few minutes to connect to the BlueChew.com affiliated physician. So if you qualify, which you probably will, you will get prescribed quickly online, Lewis.
It's all done, not in person. It's done in your computer. They send it to you in the mail. Boom, 5 minutes later, you have Blue Chew coming to your door. Holy shit. None of that, no weird conversation, no going to the pharmacy, having to make eye contact with the girl behind the counter and her being like, having some issues. Like, oh no, oh no, only your mailman. And to be honest with you, your mailman won't even know because it's very discreet packaging.
Yes, and then once you get the discreet packaging mailed to your house by going to BlueChew.com and using the promo code BELIEVE, when it arrives, put your phone on airplane mode. Block the doors, okay? Just tell the kids you're going to be busy for a few hours because you're going to get down to some serious chewing and doing. Let me tell you, you will rock the world, as I said earlier, of your significant other. They will think, wow, who is this guy? All of a sudden, there's been a change. Something has clicked, and it is the Blue Chew. But they don't need to know about that. All you got to do, go to BlueChew.com, BLUECHEW, BlueChew.com, and use the promo code BELIEVE. If you pay $5 for shipping, you get your first order for free when you use that code BELIEVE. Okay, BlueChew.com. Where were we, Lewis?
All right, so let's really quickly talk about Derek Lewis versus Aliyah Latifi. What do you think? I mean, Aliyah Latifi did better than I thought he was going to do.
Yeah, well, he didn't get knocked out because I predicted he was going to get knocked out. And man, he has got a chin because even though it wasn't the most action-packed fight, the crowd were booing and things like that, which it shouldn't have been, but I get it. They want to see violence. Lewis did connect on a few occasions. And it's not surprising that Latifi can take a shot. If you just look at his physique, the man has no neck. He has a fucking gigantic breeze block of a head and a very, very thick body as well. So he can take a shot, that's for sure. Lewis, I thought he looked good. A lot of people were criticizing his performance and whatnot, but man, for such a big guy to be able to jump in the air, throw those flying knees, throw those jumping switch kicks, which he's known for, and then even the left high kick, he throws it without jumping now as well. The left high kick, I know Rogan was talking about it. A lot of speed, a lot of power, a lot of precision. Not easy to do for a big guy like that.
Well, I mean, look, it's easy for him to do flying knees when he's fighting Aliyah Latifi, who's 5'4" or whatever the fuck he is. I mean, he's jumping all over the place with Aliyah Latifi. He's doing backflips over his head. Yeah, he did look great. You know, did he look like world championship caliber? I don't think so. I think that he struggled with Aliyah's wrestling. Aliyah is honestly a guy who should have been fighting at 185 pounds. When he was fighting at 205, every time I saw Aliyah Latifi, I was like, he could definitely cut down to 185. There's no question. He's carrying around a lot of muscle. He's like a thicker dude. I'm not a fucking expert on losing weight, but it just seemed like he was a prime candidate for somebody who would probably go down instead of up. Surprising when he went up to 265. But I don't think it did. It did Derek Lewis. When people are saying that he looked bad when he's being taken down again and again by Latier, or Aliyah rather, I think it sends a really bad message. And I think he's going to have trouble with anybody who has a good takedown.
Well, there was clearly evident that he was trying to replicate the performance that Daniel Cormier had. Go in, take Lewis down, look for the rear naked choke. Throughout the first round, he wasn't having much success. 2 and 3, he was getting the double underhooks, and then he was transitioning to a little foot sweep and just manipulating the weight of Lewis and getting him down. Lewis is good, though, at getting back to his feet. He's very explosive, you know. He's not the most technical, but he explodes. He makes a little bit of separation, a little bit of space, and then he gets back to his feet. I tell you what I did like. In rounds 3, he clearly knew that it was going to be a close fight and perhaps Latifi may get the decision. So he was really trying to get the finish. He was pushing forward. He was looking for big shots. And Latifi, on the flip side, knew what he had to do. He knew if he stood there and exchanged strikes, he was going to get beaten. He knew he was going to get knocked down or at the very most lose the decision. So play to his strength, try and take him down. And it was the double underhooks. It was the double underhooks. Now, for those people that don't know what double underhooks are, I'm going to break it down for you really fast, okay? If my opponent's arms, technique time with Bisping.
I don't want to interrupt you, but this is a new thing that Bisping is doing on the show, which is doing a walkthrough invisible opponent like Gracie Breakdown.
No. listen. I'm sitting on the couch by myself, right? I'm watching this go on over and over again. I'm watching Dominic Cruz come out with wrong information. I'm watching Derek Lewis do things wrong. I'm on my couch. I've got no one to talk to. I'm fucking screaming at the TV. It's very easy to escape. It's a technique that I developed from my travels through Southeast Asia. Over and over again, these people would double underhook me, and I had to develop a technique to escape but not do violence to them, you know, to tourists, to people, to monks, whatever they were. They would double underhook me. I had to get them away.
The Bisping family.
The Bisping family, the Bispings, they're like trying to hook me. I'm like, get fucked. Harness the good energy, block the bad. Get fucked. Redirect. There's another white man down there. I believe that's Michael Bisping. That's the one you're looking for.
Trying to double underhook you. They were trying to hug you. They're your fucking family.
I am not Michael Bisping. I have two eyes, okay? The man you're looking for is down there. It is not me. No. So, often you hear underhooks, overhooks. For the people that don't know, and this is very painful for the people that do know, okay, if a man grabs me and he grabs me under my arms, look at that, under my arms, like this, like a bear hug, but they're under my arms, they are underhooks. If they're over the arms, they are overhooks. Generally, you have what's called a 50-50. One person has an underhook, one person has an overhook. They call it 50-50 because you both got advantageous positions. The underhook is the good one because obviously you have the armpit, and with the armpit, you can use that to manipulate, you can use it to push and pull and things like that, whereas the overhook, you're kind of just controlling the opposite arm. Now, here we go. Here's what you're going to do, Lewis. Somebody's got double underhooks. You're like this. You're being bear hugged. Your family's coming in for a hug, whatever it is. Lil Latif is trying to take you down. You want to get rid of them? Okay. Michael Bisping patented technique number one. Very simple. He's got the double underhooks. You take this arm.
Dad, I love you. I love you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So keep your arms out. So you just, he's got his arms around you here. One arm over the top like that. Twist your hips. What it does, it creates separation on the arm here, and it creates a little pocket. And you get this arm and you just go into the pocket, turn in, look at this. Now you're at the 50-50, the over-under. You've escaped the move. You push the family member to the side. You push the Swedish cage fighter, whatever it is. Maybe it's a loved one. Maybe it's your grandma, whatever. Turn the hips, pummel in, face them, push away. Never see those family members again. I think Michael or never get taken down.
You do it right at the border, like at the customs. Right there, you go up and push over to the other side. Now you're in that country. I'm over here, you're over there.
Wedding day, you may kiss the bride. Shouldn't do that. Pummel in, push away. You know, it works in so many scenarios. You know, that's all you got to do. Overhook, pivot the hips, pummel in, push away. Harness the good energy. Block the
next time somebody wants to have a conversation with you, you don't want to have. They come up, they're like, hey, what's going on? How's it? Oh, harness a good energy, underhook, pummel in, push away.
It's so easy. That's how you escape. No, but seriously, that is how you escape. Double underhooked, and it's very, very simple.
In fact, guys,
technique.
If you guys send us your own TikTok video or any short video of us using the patented Bisping push away technique in the most creative environment, maybe a waiter comes up, says, hey, can I get you anything else? Pummel in, push away.
There you go. I'm going to send you a video. We can play with this of Rebecca doing it to me. She's going to come up to give me a hug. In fact, she did it Sunday morning. I picked her up from the airport. She came back from gallivanting in Las Vegas. In Australia with Tony. She came to give me the hug, the double underhooks. I'm like, no. Yeah. Go away. Go back to Australia.
Give Tony a hug.
Fuck you. Go double underhook Tony, okay?
You go to church this Sunday. The priest, body of Christ. Pummel in, double underhook, push away.
The tax man, he's coming around, he wants paying. Pummel in, double underhook, there you go. Police, they come to arrest you. Okay, hug me, double underhook. You know, whatever you want to do, that's all you got to do. That's your life hack, okay?
Beautiful.
Twist the hip.
Pummel in, twist the hip, push away. Oh, thank you, officer. Have a good day. Yeah.
Have a great day. Away you go. There's the man you're looking for. So I've taught you how to escape the crucifix of Valentina Shevchenko. That's very simple. You just pick her up and tell her to not be stupid. And then
such an annoying woman.
Fuck off. I'm trying to conduct business over here. Stop hitting me with these bothersome elbows to the face. No, I showed you how to escape that one. And there you go. A Leo Latifi double underhook attack. It's very easy to escape.
Derek Lewis. Very Jesus Christ. Oh. Open your eyes, Lewis.
My God. No, Lewis looked good, man. Lewis looked good. And the path to victory for Latifi, it was obvious. Look, to take him down. So it was one of those kind of fights, you know, and it's frustrating for Lewis and frustrating for the crowd. When one guy has got a very specific game plan, it gets annoying. And I'm sure it was annoying, Lewis. But I still feel that Lewis should have won the fight, which he did. How did you see it? You think Lewis should have won that?
Yeah, I think he should have won the fight. I think that the only thing that Aaliyah really did was... Actually, you know what? I shouldn't say that. When I watched the fight, now thinking back, I remember thinking Aaliyah should have won the fight because, I mean, he really did. Even though he wasn't, like, damaging him much, he was controlling a lot of the action. He kept on clinching with him, pressing him up against the cage. The referee kept on separating them. But, hey, who's winning in that moment? If one guy's being pressed up against the cage and it's little rabbit punches here and there or being taken down, I mean, you know, it was really close. I think I gave it to Aaliyah at the time, but I understand why you'd give it to Derek Lewis. He was landing bigger shots. The thing that I took from that was... It wasn't like, oh, my God, Aaliyah is ready for heavyweight. I was like, no, Derek Lewis needs to figure out how to not get taken down by small guys.
Overhook, twist the hips, pummel in.
We went over this already.
That's all you got to do, Lewis. Listen to the words coming out of my mouth. I remember at the time I said Lewis should have won, and a lot of people on Twitter kind of disagreed with me. That's why I asked you the question. Close fight, and you're right. Your earlier point was bang on. If you looked at Aaliyah Latifi, and I'm not hating on the guy, big fan. That's what I said last week. A huge fan, great guy, awesome fighter, big balls. He's a true fighter. If you looked at him and thought he had to change weight class, it would be to go down a weight class, not up a weight class. But still, when in there, one of the most dangerous men in the UFC, that's not an easy thing to do. Congrats, Derek Lewis. You know, I think next for him, Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes would be a good, logical matchup for him. Lewis has been around. You know, he's fought for the belt. And Curtis Razor Blaydes, he's on a roll right now. He just had a big win over Dos Santos. He's had some big wins over Overeem. I think taking out the Black Beast whilst the heavyweight division figures itself out, whilst the match of Cormier and Stipe happens. In the meantime, he fights Derek Lewis. And if he wins, which he probably would, based on the wrestling style, then he'd get a title shot. So a lot of potential big matchups for our friend Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis.
Yeah. Fun fighting night of fights overall. I did enjoy UFC 247. Yeah, overall good time. I know you wanted to talk really quickly about this press conference with a showdown between Adesanya and Romero, which was kind of an entertaining little moment. Both these guys got some moves, I'll tell you that much.
Hey, listen, it was great. Listen, you know, I mean, Israel, we all know. He's a good talker. He backs it up in the ring as well. You know, he's got star power, man. He's got the charisma. He's got the look. He's got a good sense of humor. He can dance like a motherfucker. We know that. But he can also fight. I mean, all those things and not being able to fight, you kind of a joke. But he can. He can fight like fuck as well. But they had this press conference at the weigh-ins on Friday. And I was actually driving the car. And they were airing the live press conference on the radio. So I was listening in and I was thoroughly entertained by both guys. I mean, Romero, he was going on, listen, making weight for me. You want me to make weight? I've been making this weight since 97, since 1897. Making a joke about how old he is, and then fucking Adesanya saying this guy's probably a vampire because he's so old and he doesn't get young and all this type of stuff. It was fun. It was a fun back and forth. And then they go to square up. And Yoel goes to shake his hand. Dana gets a little bit fucking, he thinks they're going to fight. And then Adesanya, because he can dance. He can dance. He starts doing a little, there he goes, doing a little shimmy with the feet. So then Romero says, I'll show you how the Cubans do it. There he goes. And then, whoa, fucking backflip. And then the splits.
Wow.
And then Israel standing there. He goes to do a little dance off and then thinks no. But now look at the look on the face here. Look at it goes to Israel. And he's just been outshined. Look, he's like, oh, fucking.
You know what happened there? I know that moment. He was like, all right, you know, you want to do this? And then he computed it all. He was like, I'm not going to be able to beat that. He was like, what he did already, I'm not going to be able to compete with. So what else can he do? His opening move was so good that I have no idea where he's going to go. So he bowed out very early, which was a smart move.
Hey, but listen, you know, I mean, let's just talk about that. Yoel Romero, 42 years old, no warm up on a stage, right? Wearing tight jeans.
Yeah.
How the fuck is he doing the splits in skinny jeans for one? That's what I want to know. There's a very stretchy fabric. Maybe Sheath Underwear want to reach out to those guys, you know, maybe compile, maybe work together on a collaboration. But to just do a fucking standing backflip like that with no warm up and then straight into the splits, I mean, come on. I don't care where you're from. That's pretty impressive.
I feel like you could so easily just fucking bust your knee doing your backflip like that. There is like just like I don't know. I don't even know if it's worth it. But good for Romero. You know, he's a badass. He's very athletic. I couldn't do a backflip. I couldn't even begin to explain. Could you do a backflip?
No. No. Definitely not. When I used to kickbox when I was a kid, and I did it in a few of my earlier MMA fights. I think what do you guys call it? Like a roundup or something? I kind of do a flip up to my I do a flip up to my hands, and then so it's kind of like a flip, but I use my hands in between. I used to do that every time I got into the ring. I'd do one of them, and I'd jump up in the air and do like the little fucking like splits in the air, or whatever. That was my go-to thing. But then I never did it in the UFC.
I just realized how gay that is as we're describing it. Like everyone's little fucking dance that they do in the ring before they start fighting. It's like whoa, splits. You did fucking splits in the air,
bro. I did it like a ballerina. Like a fucking badass. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Not like a ballerina. Listen, that's Romero's thing, but I tell you what, to do it on a stage like that, I'm telling you, that takes balls in front of all those people. You're not warmed up. You haven't planned for it. Israel starts dancing like that, and you think, you know what? Fuck this. I'll take it to a next level with skinny jeans on, with wires and cables and cameramen and monitors and the crowd and the world watching, to just jump into a backflip like that. That's pretty good. Fortunately, it's not a dancing competition. It's not a gymnastics competition, because I do feel like Romero would win that. It is a fight, okay? And, you know, I mean, Romero, God bless him, he's tough as fuck. He's got super, super explosive power. We know about the wrestling, but he is 42 years old and he does have a lot of miles on the clock.
I feel like he's also not 42. I feel like he's like 50 and he lied about his age. He's playing like baseball for like some little league when he was 20 and he's been lying ever since.
It's very possible. It's very possible. You know, I mean, the man does look, I don't know. He's a very unique individual, fair play. I like Yoel Romero. I like him a lot. I do. Like, we had that thing back and forth. So, of course, I'm going to talk shit, right? He was in my weight division and he was a challenge to me. He was a challenger. So I talked shit. Remember, we had him on as a guest in our radio show back in the day. And that was fucking hilarious. He called in. So we were messing with him. And then,
yeah, by the way, I'll say this much. I said this at the time. Good for him for calling in, for understanding the value there. He didn't even speak English. Yeah. He was just yelling at us. It was fucking crazy. It was psychotic. If you go, you find that. I think you can find it on SoundCloud or something like this. When we were SiriusXM Rush 93, almost positive it's on YouTube. It is the most bizarre thing ever. We're on the radio, and then we get a phone call, and they're like, yeah, it's Romero's manager. He wants to talk. And we're like, yeah, put him through. And he's just yelling. And Bisping's talking shit to him. And he's yelling at him. And neither of them understand each other. And it was just a hilarious little magical moment in radio history.
I'm like, shut up. I'm like, Yoel, do me a favor. Can you spell? He's like, yes, I can spell. I said, spell steroid. Come on, let's go. I'll give you a hand. S-T-E. Come on, what's the next word? But anyway, I was fucking about with him. I like Yoel. I respect him. He delivers action in the octagon. He's a good character. I think he's funny. And that fight with Israel, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of mutual respect between the two of them. But yeah. That will certainly deliver. And I'm really excited for that one. It's going
to
be
Yoel, he seems to have a little bit of a sense of how to be an entertainer. Because even when I get, you know, he did hate you and there was that whole fucking thing. You know, so if you guys don't know the history, Bisping and Yoel had words when Bisping was the champion. At one point, Bisping had a little paper like flag that they had from different countries on the table. So we had the Cuban, a paper Cuban flag, and on camera, Bisping ripped up the paper Cuban flag. It was a throwaway moment. Meant nothing to Bisping. Well, to the country of Cuba. To the entire...
Remember that video that he did burning the UK flag and dancing in the streets of Cuba with a bunch of other people with their tops off? He's going, hey, Dana, give me the fucking boy. Jimmy the fucking boy. Find that video real fast. I got to be honest. I showed it to my mate, Jason, that I run play line with. And he's like, Mike. Oh, here it is. Look.
London, Manchester, whatever you want. I want to see you face in the octagon. So they have got the people chant. You need respect for my country. That's it. Cuba, man. Hey, Dana. Give me the fucking boy.
Give me the fucking boy.
I like him more than I like you. Hey. I gotta be honest.
We'll fucking do a podcast with him then. Okay?
That'd be a good podcast.
Yeah, no, fair play, man. Fair play.
You look at the white people in the background being like, what the fuck is going on? Some tourists in the background.
Holy shit. Turn around, Gerald. We've come the wrong way. Fair play. Fair play. That was great. That was fucking awesome, to be fair. So go hate on him. He's a character. God bless him. The UFC needs more people like that. It's going to be a good fight. All right. I had a lot of people hitting me up online saying, Mike, I've been sending in my fan questions to BYM, and they just refuse to play them. I'm going to say this. I got your back. Everyone that sends me a message, I'll take on Gas Digital Studios. I will. I'll have a word. I'll go there. I'll bring up the challenging sore topics. Do we have any questions that the fans have loyally sent in, Lewis? Or are you just keeping them for yourselves, for other networks, other podcasts? What are you doing? Where's the questions?
He knows we have three questions lined up. This is all an act. I want everyone to know this is all an act.
I have no idea. All I know is I have very disgruntled believers messaging me on a daily basis. Mike, I put a lot of time and effort into this fucking question, and Lewis refuses to play it. I said to him, don't worry. Monday's show, I got you, baby boy. I'll take care of it. So we do have some questions, do we, Lewis?
Yeah, we do. If you guys want to join the conversation, shoot us an email, bympod@gmail.com, bympod@gmail.com. Shoot us your video questions, your fan art, whatever it is. We will get to it eventually. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes they're not good either. We're just fucking answering any question. If you send in an asshole question, guess what? You're going to get an asshole answer. So we're not going to do that. We're not trying to be assholes. So send in good questions. Also, you do love the show. Go get all the latest episodes at believeyoumepod.com is the website where you can get all the latest episodes. Our YouTube channel is bumping and thriving right now. Go subscribe on our YouTube channel right now. Leave us a 5-star ranking and a positive review on iTunes. And last but not least, if you guys want to get every episode we've ever done with pre-release, ad-free, and uncensored, go to gasdigitalnetworks.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial. Without further ado, Harrington, we got a few questions here.
First up, a very gruntled fan, Robert from Sheath.
Oh, hold on. Gruntled or disgruntled?
Gruntled.
They're two different things.
He's gruntled.
Yeah, no, he's very happy with us. He's gruntled.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. Robert from Sheath. All right, let's take a look at this guy.
Hey, Mike and Lewis. Big fan of the show. Robert Patton here, Sheath Underwear. I'm also a big fan of Donald Cerrone. And after that devastating loss, third in a row, and he's going to have a 6-month suspension. Once that suspension is over, what can he do to either get himself back in title contention or erase that devastating loss from the minds of people to remind them that he is the cowboy and one of the greatest of all time?
All right. First off, thank you for the question and thank you for the support of our show. Great guy. Message him a lot on social media, on Instagram. Good dude. Very, very good dude. He got a big passion for the sport as well. Cerrone's in a tough position now. Three bad losses in a row. Bad stoppages. First one was to Tony Ferguson. No shame there, but he got stopped. Remember, he blew his nose and the eyeball swelled up. Then he gets knocked out badly against Justin Gaethje in round one, and then of course finished against McGregor in style, no less. Gonna give McGregor his style points. So three bad losses, and Cerrone's been around a long time. You know, he set all these records, and I knew this was the danger going into the McGregor fight. You know, he set all these records: most bonuses, most head kick knockouts, most fights, most wins. What does that tell you? A man that's done all those things, they've been going a long time. Right, and whilst there's no shame in losing to those three, it does begin. Well, it asks you, you're forgiven if you start to ask the question, is this the end? Is he getting close to the end of his career? I'm sure Donald Cerrone can go out there and pick off some wins against mid-level talent, you know, but against the elite guys, you know, and I'm not being a hater, it's just the facts remain. He lost those three fights, lost them in style. They were all stoppages. So, listen, if he wants to continue fighting, then far be it from me to say no. Go ahead, make money, compete in the sport that you love, give the fans a lot of memories. But I just feel like trying to chase the title and taking on those big, big names isn't going to be the future for Donald. I feel like he still can have a few more years in this sport, taking on mid-card level talent. I'm not saying that as an insult, you know, but the top guys, the title challengers, the belt holders, people like that, it's just a little step too far right now. And I say that with respect.
I mean, look, let's not forget, Donald Cerrone went on a 3-fight losing skid before. It's happened before, and it's typically two championship caliber guys. He lost to Robbie Lawler, Jorge Masvidal, and Darren Till as well. And it's always those guys, those top two or three ranked guys that he seems to have trouble with. This is what he does best in the world, right? And if you're healthy and you want to compete and you can make money, and he can, he's a fucking star, then more power to him. You know, I just don't, it's a weird thing because it's like how much he has to look at himself, like how much is being a world champion, how much value is there? How much is that what's pushing him? Because I think that's what drove you, right? I think getting that title was what really drove you to the end of your career. That was a really important thing. And I think you're looking at it from the perspective of maybe Donald probably isn't going to have that world title, right? So where's the passion or where's the drive? But maybe it's just making money, having fun, fighting, and maybe it's just testing himself, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, because Donald's always been that guy. So to answer his question, how could he come back? Donald will always just fight big fights, right? So he's always one or two big wins away from being right there, right? You know, he's the guy who's probably be considered gatekeeper right now. And if he has one or two big wins against a guy who's supposed to beat him, who's supposed to be the next title challenger, well, then all of a sudden that storied career and all that experience only works in his favor. The loss to Conor McGregor is still just a loss to one of the greatest of all time. And Donald Cerrone can very easily be right there in title contention with just a couple good wins.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, he's a tremendous talent. He's had a tremendous career. The facts remain, though, that he's 36 years old, right? And part of the lighter weight classes, I mean, he's a true lightweight. He's had some fights at welterweight, had some mixed results. But he's 36, right? You know, you can't do this forever. And there's only so many miles that the body can take. Only so many wars. Only so many knockouts. And Donald's as tough as they come. He'll fight as long as there's a pulse in his heart. He's the type of guy that will continue to step inside the octagon. Just like BJ Penn. BJ Penn, everyone's telling that guy not to fight. I was with Perillo a few weeks ago. We said, yeah, BJ told me he's going to fight again. He's hitting up the UFC. He's trying to get another fight. Why? Because that's who he is. Because that's what he does. And he's a fighter through and through. Donald Cerrone is a fucking fighter. Simple as that. You got to respect the man. Win or lose, he'll still show up. He'll still try and put a show on. And he'll still take on the biggest fights possible. He'll still step into a title fight on short notice to try and get that title, to make that dream come true. So the heart, the will, the desire, the balls, the courage, whatever you want to call it, that is not what I'm doubting here. But you've just got to, at a certain time, you just got to be realistic and just say, listen, maybe the days of fighting in those big fights, maybe they're starting to become a thing of the past. That doesn't mean that he can't keep himself in shape and still fight guys. And then if a late replacement, somebody gets injured and he steps in and wins the world title fight and has that Cinderella story, just like I had, that I'm not saying that that's not a possibility, but the current results do dictate and show a reason or a cause that he's not going to fight for the title anytime soon. But that doesn't mean he can't still pursue his dream, compete in the sport that he loves, continue to make money, continue to make memories, and support his family in the best way possible. He can still do that. And only Donald can say, when the time comes, I'm done. I don't want to do that any longer.
And if he really wants to, apparently BJ Penn is looking for an opponent. He can go murder BJ Penn.
Yeah, I think the only commission in the world that would sign off on that fight would be Texas, yeah, given their current form. All right, next question. What we got?
Next up is Josh.
Afternoon, guys. Josh from Brighton in United Kingdom. Quick question.
Turn it up, bud. It's a little low.
If UFC called you tomorrow and said, "Oh, you could," we want you in a one fight deal, you can pick anyone to fight, who would you pick? Like, it could be anyone you fought in the past or anything like that. I'd like to think you'd pick Vitor Belfort only because he needed that when he was fighting you first time. And I'd like to think that if he was fighting you again with testing, you'd look like someone's out of shape, fat granddad that drinks the Weatherspoons all the time. But anyway, yeah, loving the show, guys. Listen to it every day at work. Yeah, keep up the good work. Cheers, guys.
Well, we only do 3 hours a week, so...
I was going to say, he's listening to them, though, on, like, back catalogue. He starts at episode one when we used to do audio only. He really... Fuck me, I got to listen to them. I can only imagine how bad those shows used to be. But, no, thank you for the question, my friend. Lewis, who would you pick? I mean, for me, I mean, I'd probably go with Caitlin Chookagian. Anyone in the world I could fight right now, give me Caitlin Chookagian or even Shevchenko, because you know what I do there. I just throw her off me and say, yeah, stop bothering me. Stop insulting me with these... onslaught of attacks that are just pathetic. Who would you choose, Lewis?
For me or for you?
For me.
For you? I would have you fight Francis Ngannou. Winner takes Rebecca Bisping for one evening.
Oh.
You'd throw that fight just to get her out of the house.
I'd say, listen, all right, listen, the fix is in. As long as we can film it. As long as we can film it, I want to watch it back, okay? No, all right. Do you know what? I was thinking about this recently because, of course, I miss fighting. And thank you for the question. And thank you for the love of the show. We appreciate you. Yeah, you know, I mean, I can still do this. I'm, you know, I'm working out a lot now. I'm back. I've got my garage cleaned out. I'm hitting the bags. You know, I had my heart rate checked the other day. It was all nice and low, you know. So I'd love to fight again. I just can't because of my injuries, you know. But they are saying, I did speak to a doctor the other day. They said they're starting to regenerate nerves in eyeballs. So in a few years, I might be able to get my eye fixed. You know, there's a possibility. Oh, and the comeback's on, baby boy. But who would it be against? Well, the easiest, the obvious one would be a rubber match with Luke Rockhold. Because I guess, you know, he won one and I won one. So the rubber match is still out there. You know what I mean? And he can't take a punch these days. So, you know, I'd probably say him. Vitor Belfort for sure. For sure. Vitor Belfort would love to beat that fucking cunt into oblivion. But other than them two, you know, I'm a lover, not a hater. I don't walk around thinking of violence. You know what I mean? Unless somebody tries to double underhook me, then you got a problem.
Yeah. Double underhook, then it's over. Pummel in, step to the side, push away.
Walk away. Walk away. Walk away. All right, we got one more question. What have we got?
One more. Let's do it.
All right, we have one more question from Christos. What a
weird... Turn it up a little bit.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Lewis. Chris from England. Big fan of the show, obviously. I've been listening since day dot. And if you go to YouTube, first show, first comment, at FoofDog, F-O-U-F-D-O-G. That's me. So, been there since the beginning and love the show. Question is, for both of you really, are you guys coming to UFC London? I hope you are. And if you are you going to be doing a live podcast? Because I'd love to be a special guest, even buy you both a beer and have some shits and giggles with you. So, yeah, hope you are, guys. On that note, Mike, great book. Loved it. Couldn't put it down, mate. It was just a real inspiration. What a story. And... just an inspiration to any man. Awesome.
Is he going to cry?
Jay Gomez, where's yours, mate? You need to start writing. And on that note, I tell you what.
If he was funny, he would just throw it into the fireplace.
The printer's used, but I tell you, it's got me out of some cold nights in England. Beautiful fires.
Oh, he's hilarious.
So, cheers for that, Mike.
He did throw it into the fire. That guy's a dick. I love him. Look at Mike's face.
I want to know which page he threw into the fire. Okay, can we back that up? Can we take a screenshot, zoom in? Because I want to fucking know. And I will try. We are doing a live podcast now, and we are having you on as a guest. Okay, and I'm going to fucking rear naked choke him to death in the back room. What was his name, Chris? That was a good video. I liked it. He had Gomez for president on the back wall. I'm not sure about that one. What did he say about me? What was it? Be more Bisping.
Be more Bisping.
Okay. Yeah, and then he throws a page of the book. I mean, Lewis, you'd watch that. You knew he was going to do that.
I swear on my son's life, I did not know he was going to do that. He was a pussy, though. He just took one page, like, you know, because he's such a... He loves you so much that he just took, like, the one, like, dedication page dedicated to Lucas. Yeah.
And the cheap bastard bought paperback. If you're a real fan, you buy the hard copy, the hardback. You know what I mean? Buying the discount paperback. I mean, come on. Jesus Christ. Get a grip of yourself. What was his question? Oh, podcast. What, live podcast? Is that what he wanted to
know? Are we going to England for UFC London? I know we talked about it. I can't. I got the festival coming up. It's right. It's like 3 weeks away. It's crazy.
I'll be there. I'm going to be in Brasilia. And then from Brasilia, I go to London. From London, I go to Columbus. Life on the road, you know, but I got obligations. I'm going to go. I will be there, my friend. Thank you for the question. Thank you for the fire. Thank you for ruining my book and throwing it into the fire. That is a little offensive, but whatever. All good. Thank you for the kind words. We have got to start doing some live shows, Lewis. We're going to start doing it. I know we talked about it. We're going to plan some stuff for you. We're going to start some live shows, things like that. It'll be a lot of fun. But as you heard from Lewis, he's not going to be there. But I will be there. So maybe if you're around, use a message and maybe I'll come get to say hi and give you a punch for damaging that book. But yeah, all right. Well, I guess that's our show. We'll be back on Wednesday. Thank you for the questions. Thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time. In the meantime, look after yourself. We will be back Wednesday.